A crucial focus for businesses today is sustainability, with over 90% of CEOs saying that they recognize its significance for long-term success. So as a result, organizations of all types, and we're not just talking about companies, we're talking college campuses, K-12 schools, hospitals, government facilities, you name it, restaurants, everybody. Everyone's investing in more sustainable operations. And strangely enough, technology is a big part of that. And digital signage is one of those tools. To talk about that with me today, I'm speaking to Sean Matthews, the CEO and president of Vizix. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Derek. Glad to be here.
Thanks for coming on.
I always enjoy these sessions, and I think this is an interesting topic, one that you and I haven't discussed.
This is true. I'd like to thank Sean for talking to me today, and of course, everybody out there for listening to this episode of Digital Signage Done Right. I remind you, you can subscribe, you can review us on IMDb and elsewhere, and you can follow along with a transcript on the Vizix website under Resources and Podcasts, where you will also find a lot of helpful links as well. Whether you're using digital signage or not, our podcast gives you practical tips for communications and content to better engage your audience. I'm Derek DeWitt. Welcome to Digital Signage Done Right. I think we understand that we're talking about technology that uses power, and we're not trying to greenwash stuff around. I mean, we get it. Digital signs and other technological communication methods, they're not lettuce or carrots, you know. They use electricity. They don't break down naturally. They're made out of plastics and glass and things like this. So we understand that right from the get-go.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Derek. I'm not going to sit here and say that digital signage is like the greenest thing possible. That's just not true. But as you noted, it is certainly a alternative to printing a bunch of paper signs and then throwing them in a landfill, right? I mean, that's definitely, you know, not the most positive thing. So, you know, what we really want to talk about is how digital signs can help in communication while lowering the energy consumption footprint when compared to other mediums.
I mean, I know when you're installing digital signs or room signs or any kind of infrastructure associated with that, usually you're dealing with facilities managers of some kind. And there's this new buzzword that showed up a couple of years ago, sustainable facilities management. What is that?
We went to a trade event not too long ago at the end of last year called International Facilities Management Association. Yeah, it was all about facilities managers. These are people that deal with all the physical plant operations. There's been a significant green push in this discipline. And if you go to job boards, you know, you'll see this job title and a description associated with it about energy efficiency, resource conservation, running a facility in a way that just minimizes the harmful impact of that facility on the environment. So it could be a new building, it could be an overhauled building like the one that we're in, or one that, you know, needs continuous maintenance and improvements, like a really old building like my house that was built in 1904. So it's a real thing.
So let's talk about this concept of environmental impact. As you said, like the obvious benefit of sustainable facility management is that you reduce the overall environmental footprint of the facility and overall of the organization. You can lower carbon emissions right from the beginning, from the start of construction through a structure's entire life cycle. I know the World Economic Forum did some research that said buildings consume 40% of global energy and contribute about a third to all greenhouse gas emissions. And yet, according to the EPA, 30% of the energy that a building uses gets lost through a number of different ways. It goes out through windows or through bad seals or just old structures and things like this. So when you're looking at like a sustainable facility management policy, you look at all of the energy waste and then you put in measures to try and reduce that energy waste and thus hopefully the amount of energy that you're actually using. So what I'm thinking of is like you're properly maintaining the facility. Use resources only when they're needed. Like I know where you guys are now in your new building in Vizix, you were telling me that like the HVAC it just turns on automatically, and then it turns off at a certain time as well. You don't really have any control over it. And this is kind of an optimized way to use that energy.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of little things that you can do. And, you know, as you noted, a building like ours, what's interesting is it isn't necessarily being driven by the building owner itself. In this particular case, at the county level, in order to get a certificate of occupancy, the inspector had to come in and confirm, for example, that all of the lights were LED and they had to be on motion sensors and timeout. That's really a governmental approach at the very local level. And of course, then the building owner did some other things about controlling the HVAC times and ability to manipulate the temperature. In fact, we cannot manipulate the temperature. So it's just one of those things that you can do. And if you think about like a college campus where there are entire teams devoted to, you know, sustainability on a college campus, I mean, it's like having a seasonal menu in the cafeteria, right? Or eco-friendly cleaning products. I mean, those are the kinds of things that do make a difference, right? These little things that I was just mentioning. I mean, if you think about it, you know, how much Windex is used on a college campus, right?
Oh boy, that's for sure, huh? Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the big benefits we see in this, and even in our own situation, is we have what's called common area maintenance built into our lease, which covers our percentage of the energy consumption, water consumption, et cetera. But, you know, there's cost savings in what they've done to this building here. And, you know, a lot of C-suite people kind of balk at having to pay for these changes. Like as part of our tenant improvement allowance, we had to pay for these LED bulbs, right? Which are much more expensive than traditional bulbs. But in the end, it pays off because our CAM fees are less than our previous building.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I think we're seeing this in more and more places all over the place. I see it in airports, shopping centers, and so on. Much more energy efficient lighting, not just the actual lighting devices, bulbs, and so on that are being used, but the wiring, HVAC systems. And now, of course, we're seeing a great increase in smart building technologies, which obviously we're going to see much more in the next few years. This is clearly the wave of the future. And obviously, this helps lower those energy bills. So like you said, at first you might go, man, this is pricey to put this stuff in. But over time, it saves you money. It's kind of like a digital signage system, right? An enterprise-wide digital signage system, such as what you guys make and sell, can at least sometimes be, oh, that's a price tag. But over time, it ends up kind of paying for itself, which is quite nice. So in that way, it's really part of these initiatives, you know. On the more personal level, you've got things like water reduction. You've got recycling initiatives, which means your waste disposal fees get cheaper. And all of this ends up decreasing operational costs. Green buildings basically give you a 10% savings in the first year. And using renewable energy resources for buildings ends up now being much more efficient than fossil fuel. Maybe 15, 20 years ago, that was not the case, but the market has shifted. Priorities have shifted. And now we're seeing that it's not just possible, but it's probable that you're going to pay back your upfront costs pretty quickly. Then on top of that, if you own your own building, if your building is green, then it's actually going to be valued higher than a more traditional building. So it's kind of a great return on investment there as well, should you decide to unload the property at some future date.
Well, I mean, of course, that is the real backing and purpose behind anybody that's in commercial development. At some point, they're going to want to flip that building, you know, to recover their initial investment after they fill up all the empty suites, et cetera. I mean, and certainly, you know, LEED certified buildings are in demand. They are. And it's a very strange time in the U.S. market for commercial real estate. Some of these LEED properties and even Energy Star properties are probably moving a little faster than some of the old traditional buildings, I would have to guess. And I think, you know, commercial developers are really paying attention to this subject matter because people are interested into it. You know, governments are starting to establish some regulations that control what the output measures should be in new properties and refurbished properties. And so, I do believe that that's going to be part of the initiative as the commercial real estate market space, particularly in the States because of remote work, hybrid work, et cetera, those changes change what's attractive in the commercial real estate market.
Sure. Yeah. And I think in some places we're even starting to see, certainly on a local level, sometimes there are even government grants to help with those initial costs.
Those are the types of tools that, unfortunately, it takes government initiative to do that. But it does affect, the private commercial real estate market, which most of it is private. So I do think that there are advantages here. Most of the low-hanging fruit, I'll call it, has already been addressed. Things like water, power consumption, for example, and as you noted, energy loss through windows, seals, and that kind of stuff. But now we're obviously creeping towards all the other little things that everybody can do. Obviously, that's where we fit in, because we've really kind of hit on the external benefits of saving the planet. But now we kind of can change our focus, I think, to the gains for the people who use the facility. These types of sustainable facilities, management personnel prioritize, people's health and well-being. The buildings are designed with proper ventilation, natural light access, low emission materials that contribute to a healthier indoor environment. In fact, we used to employ somebody that when we did some refurbishment, there was some off-gassing and it adversely impacted this employee. And she had to work remotely before the pandemic for 6 or 7 months because she was having some respiratory illness. So we want to obviously create an environment that enhances productivity and satisfaction.
Sure, obviously. And as we know, I say this all the time, happy cows make happy milk. Happy employees are just better at their jobs. They're more productive. They use their time better, and that's another bottom line benefit taken over time. So that's talking about the structure itself and the sort of external forces there. Now we've talked a bit about sort of for the people working there, but there's another external factor, which is brand reputation. And I know that might seem like, who cares? But I think it is important.
You see it all the time. I mean, even in TikTok ads, TikTok shops, whatever, there's a big sustainability component to a lot of the products that are offered. And of course, I do think a lot of it is very B2C oriented, right? But I do also believe it's a key to improving your overall organizational brand. There was a survey out in 2021 by a group called Simon Kucher. 50% of global consumers consider sustainability as a factor in their purchasing decisions. And some consumers consider sustainability to be a corporate responsibility, a social corporate responsibility. And they don't mind paying more money for that as long as they're buying from somebody that is a sustainable brand. And sustainability in our case and in many other cases starts with the facilities. Younger generations, rising generations are supporting sustainable businesses over those that are unsustainable. And that's according to Forbes. 90% of Gen X consumers said they would be willing to spend 10% more for sustainable products. In that same survey, 30% said they wanted to improve the environment that's personal. 23% want to reduce production waste. We all know it's out there. The first time you get a job, you see it. 22% want to reduce their own carbon footprint. And then 7% shop for sustainable products just to be a good citizen.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's interesting that they specified Gen X, which is me. I'll say I myself, maybe because I'm in a position to, I'll pay about 10% is the extra that I'm willing to pay to get something that's more sustainable, provided it really is more sustainable and they're not just greenwashing and saying it's more sustainable. I think when we look at the generations that come after mine, millennials and Gen Zers, they really have this top of mind. This is super important to them. They really want to work for organizations that are socially responsible and have sustainable practices. That's just it. More and more places are finding that if they, in addition to good life-work balance and things like this, places that don't offer or promote, and by that I mean really do it, walk the talk, sustainable practices, they're finding it harder to recruit Zoomers as they enter into the workforce. Or maybe they can get them, but since that generation already has this, that they're not looking for a career at the age of 22. They're looking for a place where they can make ends meet, and then we'll see what happens, you know. So they'll just leave in a year or two if they look around and go, this company's not doing what I think they should do. Because a lot of other companies are doing what they want them to do. So they'll just jump ship.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's definitely the case, you know, and it's taken, you know, 20 years. My involvement in VizX, you know, dates back 20 years now, and almost 20 years ago, we were, you know, offsetting our shipments using, you know, carbon offsets. And we were, you know, donating monies to these offset funds, you know, that kind of went away. And, you know, I do think at, you know, younger generations, with it being reinforced, even at the elementary and high school level, right? And then, of course, there's also social influence. You know, all of this affects investment in businesses and buildings. You know, we've written in the past about ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance. It's a set of standards that socially conscious investors use to screen investments. And so, you know, now you've got some groups that they're looking at your environmental and sustainability efforts, and they can have a, you know, a real effect on you attracting, you know, capital.
Right. That's, I think that's absolutely the case. So of course the question one might ask is, so why isn't everyone doing this? Why are there still some holdouts? So let's talk about some of the challenges that organizations face as they try to become, you know, more sustainable.
You know, implementing some sort of sustainable facilities management practice, it could require significant upfront investment, right? And retrofitting existing buildings. And we're not talking, you know, a small 18,000 square foot building. You know, we're talking about buildings that are starting at 50, 80,000 square feet, right? And so that's not a small building. And, you know, if you want to retrofit these existing buildings and upgrade the infrastructure, adopting all the energy efficient technologies that you want can be costly. And it just makes it a challenge for some organizations, you know, particularly smaller ones, to embrace these practices. And I'm not talking about quote unquote SMBs in the small to medium business in the United States. I'm talking about companies that are owners, oftentimes in real estate investment trusts or whatever, and they buy these buildings like the one that we're in. I mean, just a great example, built in the late 80s, it was a distressed property because it's been sold twice. We're with the third owner. The second owner put nothing into the building, nothing. I don't know this person, but apparently what he was trying to do was just basically live off the leases from the initial owner who sold it to him and then just let it fall apart. These guys came in and bought a distressed property and you know, really put money into it. But I can just see from, you know, looking at the building itself, that was not a cheap endeavor.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, I think this speaks to something that is kind of, in many ways, the main thing in my mind, which is mindset. Changing the way that you consider these things, the way that you think about these things, you know. And we're starting to see organizational cultures are starting to shift. The staff, which is, you know, let's face it, they're staff and they're also consumers. So in their non-work life, they're also thinking about this stuff. Maybe they started recycling at home. Maybe if they have property, they're composting. Who knows what they're doing? They're donating to carbon offset funds. They're getting a hybrid car, an electric car, etc. So of course, they're going to bring that into the workplace. And now it's starting to trickle into management. And I think encouraging those kinds of behavioral changes, it can be quite challenging. I mean, it requires, you got to educate people, you need to train them, and you need to really reinforce it continuously until it becomes rote.
You know, obviously changing mindsets makes it easier to cope with the financial constraints, right? Because you're going to see a buy-in, right? That you might not see if you just go dump a bunch of money in something. But now, I will say that probably the second thing that maybe prevents everyone from doing this, as we started with, is there's this complex, unknown regulatory landscape that exists out there. an evolving landscape of sustainability regulations. There's building codes at the local level. There's certified, you know, certification programs, like anything, can be overwhelming. And so, you know, compliance with these environmental standards and certifications, like things like LEED, which is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, BREEAM is another one, Building Research Establishment and Environmental Assessment Method. You know, it requires knowledge and expertise. And like, even take a company like Avizix or any digital signage technology company like us, which is basically an SMB in America, right? There's no Fortune 500 digital signage companies out there, right? And so we don't have that kind of knowledge, right? We're dependent on somebody else. And you know, if we were to hire an expert through our own building, you know, would be just another financial barrier. So, you know, we're just dependent on this other regulatory expense, which could add to the other financial constraints.
Right. Yes. This is absolutely the case. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, oh, okay. In order to do all this, I got to spend money on this, money on this, money on this. And also I got to make sure that I'm following all the new rules. So I got to hire someone to do that. Ah, you know, I can imagine it would be very frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's no easy way around that piece of the puzzle.
Basically, until everybody's doing it, essentially. We know this in the consumer marketplace. The more people that get interested in something, the lower the cost becomes.
You know, digital signage isn't completely free of environmental costs. I mean, it does have an ecological impact. It's relatively small by comparison, particularly when you look at, you know, traditional signage. This type of signage, digital signage, does not require paper to work. You know, the whole process from content creation to development of the campaigns, it's all done digitally, often, you know, through content management software that requires one person to run various digital signage endpoints across locations, which significantly reduces, you know, waste and carbon emissions, unlike traditional signage that uses several tons of paper. It's toxic ink every time a new campaign starts. Digital signage can be changed and updated as many times as necessary with no real additional impact on the environment. I mean, this doesn't only reduce environmental costs, but it helps your business become more economical. And so, you know, by ending the need to overhaul your traditional signage to suit your changes in business, like menus and promotions and that kind of stuff, you're saving time and money and resources.
Yeah, I don't know how many people know that paper production, not just are you cutting down a carbon sink, which is the tree, often with, yes, gas-powered chainsaws, which emit emissions, and then you're sticking this stuff through machines, which also emit things, and then you're hauling it with giant trucks, which also use diesel gas and all the rest of this stuff. But paper actually is a really water-intensive process to make. 20 liters of water are used for every A4 pulp of paper. So you think about that, you know, oh, well, I made a slight mistake. Let me just make another photocopy. Hey, I'm going to photocopy my face. You're using a lot of water on photocopying your face, right? According to a website called The World Counts, 26% of all landfill waste is paper, which as it degrades, emits other gases, which are not so great. And like I think you mentioned earlier, there's ink on those, which is toxic, and it leaches into the soil, and it's just a whole problem. So absolutely, the paperless aspect of digital signage is certainly the most obvious sustainable thing there. What else? I think it's also just more efficient in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more efficient. But, you know, Derek, first, we have to address the American audience in this podcast as well, right? Because they won't know liters, so it's just over 5 gallons, right?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah.
And so everybody else, A4 is basically 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, pretty much. So.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry. I completely forgot who my audience was when making notes. Yes.
So, you know, you brought up, you know, some of the efficiencies, you know. So a lot of people believe that digital signage isn't really eco-friendly because it uses electricity, right? And hence it has some sort of impact on the environment. But a lot of what we use in the business world, right, in the economic drivers of the world, consume power and or energy. So obviously we want to minimize what that consumption is. And so, you know, it's true that we do consume power with this technology, but displays have come like night and day. When I first got involved in this industry, you know, CRT tubes and televisions were still out there, right? It still existed in college campuses at the student union. That's only 20 years ago, right? Since then, you know, we've had evolution through LCD and LED, right, which are more cost effective to manufacture. They require less energy. So modern displays are designed to consume far less power, and they certainly don't cost $10,000 for a 55-inch display. Now you can get for several hundred dollars, and it's ENERGY STAR rated.
And then, of course, the next thing that came out after things started going LCD and LED is e-paper. E-paper is becoming quite the thing. The costs are coming down with lots of different sizes for different purposes. There's even full color now that looks pretty good. So I think we're seeing an increase in e-paper as well.
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you, man, this is a crazy life experience as a professional. I was at first exposed to electronic paper from e-ink about 24 years ago. Xerox actually owned that technology, which is, think about it, is quite weird. Xerox owned ink's technology, right? But it's taken a really long time for e-ink technology to really resonate in any market. And it wasn't really until the advent of the Kindle and similar devices that this technology really started taking off. And it wasn't because the technology was subpar or inefficient or anything like that, but there was not a real demand for manufacturing the housings and the communication technologies that change the imagery on the signs, right? So the sign by itself has to speak to something, and it does consume energy when it communicates with something that gives it updates or refreshes it or whatever. But e-paper displays run on 99% less energy than traditional LCDs. They can last months or years on a single charge. And in our case, we use those little small disc CR batteries and 10,000 updates, which is approximately 3 years. The materials to make these displays are more durable. They have a longer lifespan. They don't have the image retention problems that you see in other technologies. E-paper signs, they run on battery power for months, maybe years, depending on how often you update them. They can be installed on like almost any surface. It can be concrete, drywall, you name it, glass, without drilling, wiring. Companies have saved thousands and thousands of dollars compared to the cost of, you know, installing on-site LCDs or LEDs. I mean, it's just a significant cost savings.
Yeah, that's true. And say, as opposed to other kinds of displays, which are essentially like TVs or kind of like very large computer screens, you know, when they're on all the time, they're drawing power constantly.
Yeah. And so e-paper signs are a little bit different. They only consume power, and it's most often battery power. Most of the people that are producing these technologies, they're either using batteries and or they might be using some sort of chargeable system, but does typically require you to remove it from a mount and go charge it and put it back. So it depends on what you're trying to accomplish there. But in any case, it only consumes power when it is being updated. So whatever communication medium you're using to update these devices, it only consumes power when it's refreshing the image that's on its paper surface.
Right, exactly. It changes to the next message or whatever. That's when it uses energy.
Yeah, and I mean, the reality is in most operations, when I go around to client sites around the world, really, a lot of businesses, you know, make the mistake of leaving their digital displays on 24/7, even while their office is closed. Certainly, it's important to look at, you know, if you're going with this traditional digital signage route versus e-paper, for example, that you look for solutions that offer automated power on and off features. There's third-party products like Crestron, Extron, others. Most of the display manufacturers have built in timers so that you can even set using on-screen display controls. That way you help reduce consumption and lower the power bill. And, some displays come with energy saving features like smart brightness controls that adjust for what the light levels are at daytime, et cetera, at night. And the worst case scenario, the last person out of the building just turns that last display off in the lobby before they walk out the door.
Right. It's interesting that so much of that is becoming automated or can be controlled remotely. Because, of course, if you have a web-based CMS, especially, I mean, you could even control the content remotely.
Oh, yeah. Almost all digital signage content is being controlled using a CMS, a content management system. Pretty much can be accessed from anywhere in the world. And you can provide these updates to signs instantaneously from, wherever. It doesn't matter. Nobody has to be on site to make these changes, so it works in the hybrid, work environment as well. And, compared this to traditional signs where posters have to be printed, they have to be proofed, and they have to be, removed and changed every time you're going to, make a change to this week's campaign, the internal campaign for employee communications and, motivation, for example. All these things help to reduce the carbon footprint.
Speaking of content, one of the things obviously you can put up on the screens is, hey, these are our sustainability efforts, including, frankly, hey, we're using digital signage and this is what it's saving us, carbon-wise.
Educating and motivating people are really key to any of this, right? And so if you use a sustainable technology like this, it can really help prove our commitment to sustainability, because what you might be incorporating are KPIs and metrics about how much energy a building is consuming, right? So you're passing by it in the lobby or at a hallway intersection or you name it, right? And not only can you incorporate these KPIs, but you can incorporate little tool tips for what it is that I can do to personally even help consume less energy or water in that environment. And so, we're using digital science to help convey, sustainability, educate, motivate employees and even customers and visitors so they can be more responsible themselves.
Yeah, and of course, if it's hosted in the cloud, then you don't have to have as many machines on site. As we know, servers, like, they get hot, so they have to be cooled, and that's a whole thing. But with this, we're seeing more and more cloud hosting businesses out there. That's already a sunk cost. You're at least not contributing anymore with a cloud-based system.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, Derek, in our corporate environment, we have a small, network room, a DMARC closet, and I think there might be maybe 8 to 10 servers in this really small room, because everything that we do is in the cloud as well, but we do have some legacy servers in our facility, right? And what is interesting is that space requires its own separate HVAC system, right, that we have to pay for separately. And, it costs more. And it's not nearly as efficient as the vast amount of stuff that we have in the cloud. But I just use that as a reference that, we know that less hardware means a better environment.
Yeah, that's for sure. And obviously we're trying to find ways to not only reduce redundancy, but we want to sort of prolong the life of these devices for as long as possible. Now, of course, eventually, everything falls apart. Sooner or later, that device, that screen, that server, whatever it is, it's going to just stop working. But more and more often now, we're seeing that some of this stuff can be recycled.
Yeah, typically when digital signage has reached its lifespan, it doesn't need to be disposed in landfills. In fact, we have our own recycling campaign for electronics here in our building. Most digital signs themselves now are made out of acrylic and some sort of polycarbonate, which can all be chemically recycled and reused. And so when these things are all chemically broken down, these components are relatively non-toxic and environmentally safe. They can go on to create furniture, coasters, pipes, other merchandise. E-paper signs fall into the same thing, and they're almost absolutely accepted at electronic recycling facilities around the world.
I was going to ask. I wondered if e-paper signs were recyclable. I would imagine they are.
Yes, even the batteries that are used can be recycled.
Wow, that's crazy. Now, like you said, e-paper has been a big growth area for physics in recent months and years, and you have an even less hardware heavy system now. This AR space booking platform called Koros, which is your new thing. So let's talk a little bit about Koros and the things that you're pairing it with and the e-paper signs as kind of this commitment to sustainability.
Yeah, so actually, with the invention of Koros, which is a augmented reality based space booking solution. And what that really means is it doesn't require an app or any additional hardware. You bring your own device, you open your camera, you scan a QR code or some other NFC type technology, and it launches an entire space booking interface. You can pick a room. You can see if it's available. You can book it there for some period of time. You can add some information about what's going to take place in that room. You can actually look at what the room looks like in an augmented reality view. And then once you book it, it writes back to the calendaring platform. And everyone then becomes aware of the fact that that space has been booked at the door from a mobile device. So, you know, not only have we eliminated any additional power consumption at the door, we've really created an entire platform, because the reality is that these traditional digital signs mounted outside of conference rooms and classrooms, and there are more than 50 manufacturers in the world of these types of signs, but they all require a low voltage run, and they require to be mounted on the walls, and they consume power. Most of them consume 30 watts of power. And the one advantage that technology has, which we've been producing as well, is it has LED lights on the outside of it, right? And you can see the event schedule. So we have paired Koros, our augmented reality product, with electronic paper and then super low voltage availability lights to create an entire platform. Not only that extends to classrooms and conference rooms, but it can go out to desks that are used in hot desking environments or hybrid environments. We can go all the way down to desks in the forms of desk signs or even just electronic paper nameplates, which are very small. So this entire offering, if you think about what I just said, was bring your own device, an electronic paper sign, which only consumes energy when its image changes. And then third, using LoRaWAN technology, ultra low voltage availability lights, an entire platform that is very sustainable.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like you sat around and looked at a room sign and went, okay, what if we tore this apart into its various components and made each one of those components more energy efficient, and then said, okay, here we go. It's Koros. And people use their phones.
Yeah. I mean, and Derek, just to be honest with you, we've wanted to solve that problem for a really long time, because for us, you know, selling a majority of the room signs in North America that we've produced, there are several states, and I'll pick on New York and North Carolina in particular, that have incredibly stringent fire codes. And these fire codes related to recess mounting these electronic signs, for example, made it almost not even possible for some clients to recess these electronic signs because of these electrical power codes and the enforcement by the fire marshals in those areas. So for us to be able to eliminate that problem for our integration partners and our facility partners, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, sure. And it's, you know, let's face it, it's just using a heck of a lot less power. And room signs were already kind of low power.
Yeah, they were, but they still were, in most cases, consuming 30 watts per sign, right? And you start to multiply that and your wattage starts to add up pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I think it's safe to say that technological innovations such as these are the way forward. And as I sort of hinted at the beginning, it may seem counterintuitive that technology, which in fact is one of the sources of the issues that we're dealing with when it comes to the environment and environmental safety and environmental savings and so on, and yet technology is going to be the thing that kind of gets us through it, which, you know, I think it's kind of poetic almost in some ways.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, in the end, technology is not going to go away. And it's important for all of us to understand that we need to further pursue technologies that can be recycled, that are sustainable, and those that consume the least amount of energy in their production process and their useful life, and also in their recycled lives. So I'm excited about what we're doing and what we contribute to that type of sustainability initiative, and you know, look forward to even making further advances in the future.
We'll have to have a whole nother conversation about where the future is going with all this stuff, and maybe also some advice on helping facility managers get started in this direction. But for now, I'll say that this it's been quite exciting to have a conversation about sustainability and digital signage and just kind of the lay of the land. I'd like to thank my guest today, Sean Matthews, President and CEO of Vizix, for talking to me. Thanks, Sean. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Derek. I appreciate it, and always glad to be here. And I look forward to the next conversation about maybe guiding people towards what to do to really embrace these initiatives.
You know, I'm on board. I'm 100% sold. And hopefully, after listening to this, all of you are out there as well. Again, I remind you that you can follow along with a transcript on the Vizix website under resources and podcasts, and you can subscribe and review us as well. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Digital Signage Done Right. For more free stuff, head to resourcesonvizix.com for guides, videos, and more to help with your visual communications. Please subscribe and share, and contact us for information about our digital signage solutions.